From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gastina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo continues to try to revise his role in creating the Moreland Commission. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on that and the possibility of reform in the coming session. And with debate over who should be allowed into the country, some municipalities in New York are taking steps to welcome refugees from Syria and other locations. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo continues to try to revise his role in creating the Moreland Commission. He now says the defunct commission was never intended to investigate, to prosecute anyone. More now from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
Earlier in December, Governor Cuomo was asked about the Moreland Commission on Government Corruption that he created and then ended. He said it was never supposed to actually probe suspected lawbreaking or accuse any state politicians of illegal acts.
The Moreland Commission was not an investigative prosecutorial commission. That commission was to educate the public, to spur the legislature to pass ethics laws.
Those statements raised eyebrows because they were in direct contrast with the actual full title of the Moreland Commission itself, which was called the Moreland Commission to Investigate Public Corruption. And the governor's remarks seem to be the opposite of what he said when he announced the commission back in July of 2013.
Your mission is to put a system in place that says, A, we're going to punish the wrongdoers, and to the extent people have violated the public trust, they will be punished.
Cuomo even ran a television ad, the first of his 2014 re-election campaign, reiterating his intentions.
So I am appointing a new independent commission led by top law enforcement officials from all across this great state to investigate and prosecute wrongdoing.
Cuomo ended the commission less than a year later, in March of 2014, as part of a budget deal that included some ethics reforms, like new laws against bribery and the creation of the crime of corrupting the government. The closure of the commission became controversial when Cuomo aides were accused of stopping the district attorneys and other investigators on the commission from probing campaign donors that gave heavily to the governor. When the governor objected to those accusations, Cuomo was chided by U.S. Attorney Preet Bharara. Bharara threatened to launch an investigation for possible obstruction of justice or witness tampering. Bharara recently successfully prosecuted the former Speaker of the Assembly on corruption charges in late November, and a case against the former Senate leader and his son is due to go to the jury on Thursday. Cuomo, as early as April of 2014, was trying to recharacterize the role of the commission. He said it was more about getting the Senate and Assembly to pass reform legislation than it ever was about going after anyone. He said he told lawmakers that.
Said consistently, if we pass that law, that we would end Moreland, and we have. And I told the Moreland Commission that from day one.
It's unclear from his remarks whether Cuomo was telling commission members one thing privately, then telling the public he intended to prosecute and investigate the potential lawbreakers. The website for the Moreland Commission and its links to its public hearings had disappeared from the internet briefly. But after a report in the Albany Times-Union mentioned the down website, the site was restored. A link to one of the hearings that dealt with dysfunction at the State Board of Elections is still missing, though. A spokesman for the governor did not address the discrepancy in Cuomo's characterization of the Moreland Commission, but he did say that the partial disappearance from the internet of the Moreland Commission website was not any kind of conspiracy and is much ado about nothing. Spokesman Rich Azzopardi says it's simply that the server for the site expired and that technicians are transferring the data over to the new server on a rolling basis. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. Well, Alan, our Karen DeWitt just reporting the following. Governor Cuomo continues to try to revise his role in creating the Moreland Commission. He now says the defunct commission was never intended to investigate or prosecute anyone.
Well, yes, it was, and that's why he got the attorney general of the state, Eric Schneiderman, to deputize all the members of the Moreland Act Commission so that they could go, in fact, after the legislature. And you can historiographize all you want. But, you know, it was a group of district attorneys mainly who were told to go out and get them. And when they got close, and there's no changing history, the governor pulled the plug. There are 1,000 different potential motives. If I were him right now, I don't want to offer him any advice, but if I were him, I'd just shut up. I mean, he did what he did. Every time he tells something like this, that it was never intended to be that kind of a body, everybody shrugs their shoulders and say he's not telling the truth. And whether he sees it that way himself or not, I don't know. But, you know, let it go away. It was going away. Let it go away.
Well, the calls for reform aren't going away in light of the trial of Sheldon Silver. We will, of course, talk a bit about this trial of Dean Skelos. But, you know, the governor said there wasn't time for a special session. It wasn't practical, but it would be addressed in the coming session. Your thoughts on that?
Well, one can only think he doesn't want ethics reform because you strike while the iron is hot and this is a good time to do it. And what happens is inevitably he puts something up that is really just a very small Band-Aid as opposed to doing something that will really change it. So you ask the next question, David, I know you were, which is, what is it that could really change ethics in New York State? Okay, there are two things. We have one of them in Massachusetts, where I live, and that is initiative and referendum. The legislature misbehaves and starts doing what's good for it and not for the people. The people collect a certain number of signatures. They put it on the ballot and they say, okay, we're overriding you, legislature, because you're a bunch of political prostitutes and we know it. And it works. Now, sometimes the people are stupid and they pass, you know, things that don't stand up to the light of day. And then sooner or later, you change them because, you know, that's what happens. So one thing I would do is initiative and referendum. We'll never have it in New York because no matter what these people say about, we're good legislators, don't hold us responsible. They vote for these guys and they are not going to kill the golden goose that has been feeding them for so long. The second thing you can do, and people love it and would vote for it overwhelmingly as they did in the city of New York, is term limits. You can only be here for a certain number of years. 8 years sounds reasonable to me. For those people who are saying, oh no, the way to do ethics reform is to make it a full-time legislature, give them even more money, and let them then stay around forever as well as do everything they've been doing all along. Because believe me, there'll always be wives who people get jobs for. There'll always be kids, as in the Skelos trial. That's what happens. So those are two good things. You want to clean up Albany, that's the way to do it.
The trial, as we sit here on a Thursday recording, Alan, of Dean Skelos is about to head to a jury, and we may even have a verdict before the week is out. But as we sit here today, we've been witness to arguments that Dean Skelos used his position to help his son Adam in a variety of ways, jobs, house, other things, and many recorded conversations. And late in the week, the defense lawyers pointed out something you've been talking about all along, which is no matter how you look at this, it's not a quid pro quo.
Well, that's right. The Supreme Court has said you have to have a specific quid pro quo. I'll do this if you do that. Now, a lot of people testified that it was their understanding if they helped the kid, the father would help them. The defense says, you know, that's maybe what they thought, but there was never a specific quid pro quo. So all it takes on a jury of 12 people is one person who says no. This is just a papa trying to help his kid. So this is a bad time for defendants, of course, because everybody sort of knows about the mess, you know, in Albany. So this is one that could come out anyway. But once again, Preet Bharara deserves a lot of credit for having taken the sewer top off and let the smell come out so that everybody could see it.
And of course, a victory with Sheldon Silver, convicted on all 7 counts of corruption. But of course, there's an appeal.
Oh, yes. There's an appeal, as there was with Joe Bruno. It took him a lot of years, but Joe Bruno was finally exonerated. They said, no, you know, this wasn't. Now, there'll be people who argue with me and say, he was not exonerated. No, you know, when a court says you're not guilty, you're not guilty. And the state of New York had to pay for all its lawyers. We're talking about millions of dollars for Bruno, and that may well happen here, too, with silver. Nevertheless, his name has been taken off the legislative door. He's been thrown out. It's a great come down for certainly one of the most powerful men in the history of the state.
Finally, a presidential candidate and New Yorker, Donald Trump, causing waves across the country this week. I'm reading from now from the AP, Alan. A severed pig's head was left outside Philadelphia Mosque. An Islamic center in Florida was defaced. A Sikh temple in California was vandalized by someone who mistook it for a mosque. Advocacy groups believe there's been a spike in anti-Muslim incidents across the U.S. in recent weeks and have linked it to last week's mass shooting in California and the inflammatory rhetoric of Donald Trump and other Republican candidates. Of course, Trump called for all Muslims to be kept out of the country.
And as of this morning, as we speak, Muhammad Ali, one of the great men of America and certainly the most famous of the Muslim leaders, is speaking out against Trump. We may not be naming him specifically, but we all know what he's doing. And this is a very dangerous time, David. You go back to the history of Germany, for example, and see how Jews were being singled out and scapegoated before the Holocaust actually began. It is a very scary time. And there are so many Muslims in this world that we would have to be out of our minds to even consider the idea that we're going to use religion as a test for whether you can come into this country or not. This guy, Trump, wants to win so badly that when he begins to lose in the poll, he throws another log on the fire. And that's exactly what has happened here.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Giustina. With debate raging over who should be allowed into the country, some municipalities in New York are taking steps to welcome refugees from Syria and other locations. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas has more.
John Friedman is the alderman representing the 3rd Ward of Hudson, New York. He has authored a resolution modeled after one crafted by the city of Chicago, holding out Hudson as a beacon for refugees.
I did it because I was listening to a lot of the political reportage yesterday about Donald Trump and his ludicrous anti-American statement about blocking Muslim people from entering the United States. And prior to that, right before Thanksgiving, and then kind of lost after the fact, was the debate about whether or not states could properly exclude Syrian refugees from being settled within their borders.
The measure cites Governor Andrew Cuomo's assertion that the Empire State welcomes vetted refugees in line with America's spirit and traditions of freedom and tolerance, as well as the Refugee Act of 1980 that declared it the historic policy of the United States to respond to the urgent needs of persons subject to persecution in their homelands. Meanwhile, the City Council in Northampton, Massachusetts, passed a resolution last week declaring the city to be a sanctuary for refugees. Jeff Napolitano is the director of the Western Mass chapter of the American Friends Service Committee, which is encouraging people in Northampton to sign a public form to express support for refugees and their willingness to take refugees into their home.
We put out a form that people can sign up in which they can say, hey, I have a bedroom or two bedrooms or a basement or something to take in refugees. This was really born of a number of people on Facebook, of all places, that was saying, listen, you know, I don't like what we're hearing in sort of like the national political conversation, and I don't like what Governor Baker said. And damn it, I'll take in somebody if somebody's looking for a place. And so that's where that sort of started a couple of weeks ago and has translated into this resolution.
Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker joined with about 30 other U.S. governors in calling for a moratorium on Syrian refugees settling in their states. They have cited fears that Islamic State terrorists could fall in among the flow of refugees to sneak into the country. Napolitano doesn't fear that.
The folks who are coming in are vetted and gone through, I believe it's a total of 7 security and background checks by the federal government. They are the segment of folks coming into the country who are the most vetted.
Back in Hudson, Friedman says there is no set plan yet developed to deal with refugees, should any wish to settle there.
I'd really have to reach out to the new mayor, the mayor-elect right now, to see what we could put into place. But I think the city has pretty good relationships with a lot of the social services agencies, the NGO social services agencies, which locate in Hudson because it's the county seat of sprawling Columbia County, and also the county Department of Social Services.
You can read the Hudson Resolution at WAMC.org. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
New York Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul was in Plattsburgh this week to tour cultural and business venues and discuss economic development. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley was there and filed this report.
Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul visited a number of venues while in Plattsburgh Monday, including the Momont Elementary School and Spencer ARL, a transportation equipment company. She also toured the newly restored Strand Theater downtown and historic 1924 Vaudeville Theater, whose renovation was among the first priority projects funded by the North Country Regional Economic Development Council. City Councilor and Strand Theater Director Joshua Kretzer guided her through the evolution of the refurbishments.
The theater went through many reincarnations. The building unfortunately fell into a horrible state of disrepair. The Regional Economic Development Council was instrumental in us being able to fund a number of phases of improvements that have just completely transformed the space into what it is now.
Is it finished?
We're still ongoing.
Prior to the tour, the Lieutenant Governor held a meeting with economic development and business leaders at the theater to discuss how the region can capitalize on its strengths.
The biggest challenge faced by our employers today is not finding the skilled workers they need to step into the existing jobs. And as we continue to grow, particularly in the transportation equipment industries, which are really robust in this area, we've got to do more. I'm going to continue working with the business community to make sure that we align our colleges, our high schools, community colleges, to find out what specific skills the employers need to take this economy to a new level.
Plattsburgh North Country Chamber of Commerce President and CEO Gary Douglas noted that regional economic development has changed as the Cuomo administration works in collaboration with the business community.
The conversation quickly turned to workforce availability and skills, particularly in connection with things that we're foreseeing over the next several years that are going to tighten the workforce situation here and actually give us an opportunity to draw new people in, but we're going to have to focus a lot of attention very aggressively behind our existing workforce development systems, getting them to work together even more closely than they're already doing, and to do some new things. So much of the conversation was about workforce.
Hochul, who chairs the 10 statewide economic development councils, says she is out of the loop regarding the selection process and does not know which regions will receive funding on Thursday.
There really are no losers in this process because the governor has added so much more money, not just to this opportunity to win $500 million for three regions, but separate from that is the consolidated funding program, the traditional economic development dollars, and he has infused even more money into that program. So anyone who's this year does not come out on top, they will still receive more money than the winners from last year's round.
In the wake of former Assembly Speaker Sheldon Silver's corruption conviction last week, Hochul claimed that Governor Cuomo would continue his push for reforms.
The governor last year was successful in getting a number of initiatives through. We now have the toughest anti-bribery laws for public officials on the books. We also have restrictions on the use of campaign finance funds. The governor has called for the end of the LLC loophole, which is a way that people are funneling thousands of dollars into campaigns from businesses. He wants that to end. The governor has been a leader on this, but he needs partners. And we are heartened to hear that Majority Leader John Flanagan has said that the Senate will take this issue up. So the governor is going to keep pushing, as he has for the last 4 years, to make sure we've got the toughest ethics laws in the nation. But we need the Assembly and the Senate to work with us as well.
The Albany Times-Union reported in August that the Cuomo re-election campaign received $200,000 from four separate LLCs with the same address in Brooklyn. In June 2014, ProPublica reported that Cuomo said he accepted the funds in order to get elected to change the law. ProPublica's analysis of state campaign filings during his first 3.5 years in office showed that the governor had received more than $6.2 million from LLCs. I'm Pat Brapley, WAMC News.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. There's a new report warning of the impacts on existing casinos by new entrants in the Northeast. Current gambling operations say they're doing what's necessary to stay competitive. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard explains.
An announcement by Moody's Investors Service claims new entrants in the Northeast casino boom, including in Schenectady, Springfield, and perhaps north of Hartford, will oversaturate the market. It's a longtime fear among existing gambling operations and echoes admonishments often made by opponents of new casinos. Moody's says Atlantic City will be hit particularly hard, citing the closure of four casinos last year from the increased competition in New York, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Delaware. The agency says Native American casinos in New York will also take a hit. New York's casino gambling law has opened the door for three casinos that have already been selected for a license. The licenses have not yet been officially issued. A fourth is in the works in the Southern Tier. Joel Barkin, a spokesman for the Turning Stone Resort and Casino and VP of Communications for the Oneida Indian Nation, says gambling regulators in New York need to be cautious as they move forward.
New York State needs to be very careful about how it plans for the future, given the reality that that gaming proliferation will only increase around, you know, in border states and elsewhere, and how that impacts the economic development in New York State, which is something that we have been very focused on and very vocal on, that we should not in New York State be approving any gaming that is going to be cannibalizing from existing economic development.
The Oneida Nation has run an advertising campaign against the proposed Lago Casino in Seneca County.
It was a plan that was supposed to revitalize upstate with a promise of new jobs. But the Lago Casino breaks that promise.
Lago, which was one of the three projects given the initial green light by the state a year ago, has countered with its own ad.
Why the attack ads? For the Oneidas, it's all about keeping their monopoly, greed, preventing competition, and killing new jobs for New York.
Lago spokesman Steve Greenberg said, quote, "We look forward to getting our license from the Gaming Commission and building the best resort casino in upstate New York," unquote. Existing gambling operations have had to make new investments to stay competitive. Barkin says the Oneidas will have a leg up on the competition, as they already offer dining, events, golf, and other amenities at Turning Stone. A new $100 million high-end retail shopping center is also in the works. Meantime, the Saratoga Casino and Raceway, home to a state-regulated video lottery terminal facility, is moving forward with a $34 million hotel expansion. Racino spokeswoman Rita Cox said the hotel expansion is expected to be completed by June.
Anytime you bring more supply in, it's going to lead to operational changes and challenges.
This year, New York allowed the Racino to invest in new video gaming machines that would feature quote-unquote games of skill, including blackjack, roulette, and poker. 25 miles away in Schenectady, Rush Street Gaming and the Galisi Group are constructing the Rivers Casino and Resort and neighboring Mohawk Harbor project. Built on the site of the former American Locomotive Company plant, the projects will feature gambling, a hotel, commercial space, retail, and residential units. The Moody's report does predict that gaming equipment manufacturers will benefit in the casino boom, with the estimate that 20,000 new slot machines will be ordered. Moody's says the eight new casinos in the Northeast by 2018 will represent $5 billion in construction revenues. There's a link to the Moody's report at WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262 and ask for program number 1550. Or just listen or podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.